Vedanta teacher James Swartz on Bhagavad Gita. An audio workshop brought to you by meinyogalehrer.de, recorded in Yoga Vidya Westerwald Ashram in Germany on March 2013. Part 6 of 13.
Om Brahmanandam Paramasukadam Kivalam Yarmortim Tvandvatitam Gandhanasadrisham Tattvamasya Vilaksham Ekam Nityam Vimalamachalam Sarvadisa Chibhutam Bhavatitam Trigunarahitam Sadgurum tam namami Narayanam padmabhavam vishishtam Shaktim chatatputra parasarancha Vyasam sukham gaudapadam mahantam Govinda yogindra matasya shishyam Shri Shankaracharya matasya padmaha Padam chahastamalakancha shishyam Tam totikam partika karamanyam asmad gurum shantatam anatoshmihi Vishwam darpana drishyamani nagari tuyam nijantargatam pasyanatmani mayaya vaivurivod bhutam yata nidraya Yasakshat kurute prabodha samaye Svatmanameva dvayam tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye namaidam Shri Dakshinamurtaye namaha om. Govinda Narayana, Chapter 3, Karma Yoga. Arjuna said, you say that knowledge is superior to action, but if this is true, why do you encourage me to do this gruesome deed? Gruesome deed means to killing these people. You say, I don't know why. Arjuna is trying to wiggle out of his job here. He's going to use his spiritual knowledge here to get out of doing his work, doing his duty. Yeah, you said knowledge is good, so why are you telling me to do this? See, you're confusing me with seemingly contradictory words. Decide what is best and reveal the one path to liberation. It's interesting, very nice verse, because he says here, it's seemingly contradictory words. In our tradition, in Vedanta, we have a dialogue with the students. The teachers and the students have a conversation. We don't put ourselves up and the student down. Our method of communication is called Sakya Bhava. Sakya Bhava means friendship. So we don't think we're big gurus and you're ignorant disciples. That's not how we see it. We see everything as a self. And so the best means for communicating self-knowledge is as friends, because friends are equals. There's no power relationship between friends. There's no upper and lower. Friends are equal. See each other the same. So Arjuna's not afraid to question Krishna, but he questions him in a very polite way. He's not confrontational. He says, you are confusing. He could have said, you're confusing me. You said this and then you said that, and you're confusing me. He could have talked like that, but he doesn't. He's very well-mannered and polite. He's following Dharma. He said, you are confusing me with seemingly contradictory words. Means he's open to the possibility that he doesn't understand something. That's why he says seemingly. Maybe I've got it wrong. That's what he's admitting. He's not taking a stance that he's right and Krishna's making a problem for him. He's saying, well, maybe I'm wrong. That's why he says seemingly. And he can do that because he has an easy, confident relationship with the teacher. Because the teacher's not acting big. Most of these modern teachers, they act like you're nothing and they're something. And you feel like you're supposed to worship them and you're supposed to bow to them and you mince around like little mice at the feet and act like they're special and big. And that's the wrong way to get understanding. It's a religious way. Religious people, their method of teaching has a special term also, and it's basically what it is. It's a relationship of a parent to a child. I'm the parent, I know better, and you're the kid, and you don't know anything, and you listen to me, and you obey me, and you do what I say. It's called obedience and surrender and all of that. That's the basic style of worship, and it's an infantile relationship. You should not have an infantile, you should not look up. You should look up to the knowledge, but the teacher, you should just see them as another person and speak to them normally and naturally as you would speak to anybody on the street with just politeness and respect, the same respect you would give anybody, but no special respect. Understand, this is very important for Vedanta. This is why we are very different from these other traditions. Because if you want to surrender to something or look up to something, look up to the knowledge, look up to the scripture, worship God, worship the scripture, but don't worship the teacher. The teacher is just a vehicle, an instrument, a symbol of this knowledge. So we're not asking for your surrender, we're just asking for what? Just common, everyday courtesy, that's all. Now he said, and then he's got this religious mentality, Arjuna, because he says, decide what is best and reveal the one path to liberation. Now, he wants to be given a formula. Without thinking about it, without reasoning it out, he wants Krishna to tell him what to do. And Krishna's not gonna tell him exactly what's best. He wants to make him think. We're trying to encourage you to think for yourself. We're not trying to tell you what to do. Mind you, a guru should never tell you what to do. If a guru tells you what to do, it's not a guru. A guru is somebody who reveals knowledge by getting you to see it yourself. They'll give you the knowledge, but they'll coax it out of you because you already know what's right. You already know who you are. And a teacher is just somebody who helps you to pull it out of yourself and gets you to discover it for yourself. So Krishna, that's important here. Because you don't want to end up having a guru tell you what the score is. What good is that? Then you're just dependent on the stupid guru, which you don't want. We want to set you free, and we want to set you free of the guru and the scripture. That's the whole idea. We're not looking to tie you down and put you in a particular relationship. We're trying to free you of all relationships and all situations. That's the point here. Krishna said, I ordained he's speaking as Ishwara. I obtained a twofold lifestyle for beings in this world, the path of knowledge for renunciates and the path of actions for action for doers. Okay? that in our tradition there are only two paths. There's not many paths. There's only two paths, and wherever you are here, there are only these two factors operating here. What? Action and knowledge. So there's a path for the active people, and there's a path for the people who are seeking knowledge. Both the active people and those renunciates, those sannyasis, are going for moksha. But the path for the sannyasis is different than the path for the karma yogis. Okay? You see saying this now. You've got to understand this. You cannot get free of action merely by the non-performance of action. We already discussed this. Nor can you attain liberation simply by renunciation. Indeed, you cannot avoid action even for a second because sattva, rajas, and tamas compel you to act. Now, a sannyasi, he's speaking to Arjuna here, now a sannyasi doesn't have to do any actions. Why not? Because he or she is a contemplative already. A sannyasi is a person, a renunciate, who's renounced the world. They have understood that there's nothing in the world that they want. That's what a renunciate or sannyasi is. They don't want money. They don't want a relationship. They don't want fame. There's nothing in the world they want. They've seen that the samsara is a zero-sum game, and you can't win anything here. You can't get anything out of this world. That's a sannyasi. But a karmi, and a karma yogi, karmis are different from karma yogis. Karmis are just worldly people, but karma yogis are worldly people who are what? Going for moksha. A karma yogi, they've got karma in the world. They have attachment and desire and circumstances in the world that are meaningful to them, that are important to them. So if those people, they've got to do karma yoga. They've got to do action. They've got to work out their samskaras, their katvasanas. Using what? The karma yoga attitude. That way they neutralize those vasanas, because if they just walk away from their lives, and this is what happens all the time, the individuals get fed up with life, and instead of cleaning up their karma and laying the whole thing to rest, they run off to India or join an ashram and they say, to hell with it. And they leave everything behind. They don't clean it all up. And so it's cooking away there in the background. They're now trying to start a new life. They haven't cleaned up the old life. And as soon as they get enlightened, then all the old stuff comes back and they get unenlightened fast. Happens every day. And so Krishna is not going to let Arjuna pull this one. This is a clever one. I'm spiritual now. I don't have any worldly karma. See? So he said, and you can't just do knowledge. Why? Because your samskaras, your vasanas, the gunas, the three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, they're causing you to act. So you're going to have the same problems when you run away from your life, when you walk away from your life, that you, in your new life, you're going to have the same problems you had in your old life. They'll just follow you along. Because the gunas don't know that you've changed. The gunas don't know that you've moved on. They're in you, and wherever you go, your problems go right along with you. A person who controls the senses, yet craves sense pleasures, is confused. You're controlling your senses, but what? But you still want the sense objects. You're confused. You can't do that. Huh? He says here, it's better to control the senses and act with a karma yoga understanding. Because all you'll do when you do control the senses and still long is you'll just keep the vasana. You won't do the action, but you'll just keep the vasana, will just stay there. And it's the vasana that's the problem. That's what's disturbing your mind. So you need to, what is he saying here? You need to, like, go right ahead and do what you do. Go right ahead and live your life as you live it, but do it with a karma yoga attitude, and that will burn out what? The vasana. Because karma yoga burns up your past, your karmas. That's what it does. So he says it's better to do that than just try to control yourself. Go right ahead, but consecrate it, do it as karma yoga, and what? Take the result as prasad, and those vasanas will go away. Because action is superior to inaction, you should do what has to be done. It is even impossible to maintain the body without action, much less maintain your psychological and emotional problem, intellectual situation. You still, even everything requires action. So you need to do action in this spirit. But we're not trying, there are two kinds of sannyas, renunciation. It's the theme, basic theme in Bhagavad Gita. One is called karma sannyas, and the other is called jnana karma sannyas. Karma sannyas means renouncing actions, activities. I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't have sex, I do, you know, so forth. I don't, whatever it is. You decide, I don't want to do all these things. They're not good for me. So I quit doing them. That's called karma sannyas. Now, what's the problem with that idea as far as moksha is concerned? What's the problem? The problem is, you still got a doer there, don't you? You still got a person who renounced the action. You haven't solved the fundamental problem, have you? All you've done is got rid of actions that are not pleasant for you, not pleasing for you. You haven't what? Got rid of what? The doer. Moksha, liberation, is liberation from the doer. That's called jnana karma sannyas. Now we put karma jnana with karma sannyas. Why? Because the only way you can get rid of the doer is to understand that you're not the doer. You see? The doer says, I don't want to do. So he stops doing these things. But you haven't stopped being a doer, have you? You're still a doer who's not doing now. That's all. You're not doing the bad things, but you still got you. And it's not the things that you're doing that's the problem. It's thinking that you're a doer that's the problem. Because that doer will just have to what? Keep doing more stuff, and he'll still be driven by his or her new vasanas, whatever they are. Because you can't avoid doing anyway. Understand. And the only way you're going to understand that you're not the doer is to understand who is the doer and who you are. Now, who is the doer here? Who is doing all this? Ishvara. The gunas. The three gunas are Ishvara, Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. Maya is called Tri-Gun Atmika Maya. Maya means the three gunas. That's called Ishvara. That's what's controlling regulating and governing all of the doings. In other words, all the actions that are happening here are the result of all the forces in the Dharma field. You can't, the doer is one factor in the field. The doer is here. This is called ego, the doer. That's one small factor in a whole matrix of forces and powers and factors that what are operating here. And if you remove any one of these, you have no action. Because this whole thing is nothing but a dream, a movie. If you take one thing out of the movie, the whole movie collapses. It requires every bit for it to be a movie. So action is happening as a result of the doer, of the gunas. You're not causing action to happen. So that's the doer, are the vasanas, not the person. This person here, this subtle body, is being done. If you take yourself to be the subtle body, you're being done. You're not in control of the actions. That's the point. Action is happening, and you're only responding to the actions that are coming from the causal body. Because whatever appears here is coming from here. So the gunas are the doer here, not you, if you think you're this. If you think you're awareness, if you understand that you're awareness, then you're not the doer anyway, are you? Because awareness can't do anything. Awareness is not an individual that can do anything. Awareness is non-dual, so how's it going to do? In other words, awareness is everywhere, so it can't move from one place to another. It can't change. Awareness can't change, so how's it going to do anything? Every atom of the universe is nothing packed with nothing but awareness, so there's no other principle here that can cause action or movement or doing. Understand? Yes.
So, I am to understand that I'm awareness and I'm not doer.
Yeah.
This act of understanding, Who is doing that?
Nobody's doing that. No, knowledge is not subject-oriented. That's a very good question. Knowledge is not subjective. Like, okay, what is this?
Paper.
Did you do that knowledge?
No.
No, you didn't do that, did you? All you had to do for this knowledge to happen was you had to have your eyes open and your mind had to be behind your eyes. And when this paper was presented to you, the knowledge took place automatically. Knowledge is object-oriented. It's not centered on the doer. Understand, nobody's doing the knowledge, just like nobody's doing devotion. You can't do devotion. People say, well, I'm doing bhakti. You can't do bhakti. Yes, sir?
Yeah, but there is this notion of the knower, the known, so the subject, the object, and the knowing process. Yeah, you have these three.
Yeah.
So when you say there's no knower.
There's no. Well, in Maya there is a knower, but that's right. In other words, the subtle body is called reflected awareness, and that we call the knower. That's a doing, an apparently doing witness, And then there are objects that appear to the subtle body, to the person, and then the act of knowing happens in that.
Between the two.
Between the two, then knowledge takes place. But knowledge is not an action. Understand?
But what of the three is knowledge then?
What's that?
What of the three? You have the knower, the knowing, and the known. What's knowledge?
The knowledge is the vritti, the thought, that arises in the subtle body, in the knower, when an object appears. Knowledge is just a thought. That's all it is. It's a vritti, it's called a vritti, or a thought that arises. When you saw this paper, then what happened? The knowledge, paper knowledge, came to your mind in the form of a thought. See?
So, as I understand it, for instance, if you do meditation,
yeah,
you have a knower, you have the known, the object, and the knowledge.
Yeah.
And so there has to be a flow between the known and the knower, which is called jnana. The other one is jnatri, the knower, and jnaya, the one to be, to be known.
Yeah.
So in meditation, when at some point the object or the object might disappear, and the subject might also disappear, and also this jnana process, which is called also dhyana,
remains.
So the important thing is jnana.
That disappears too, doesn't it? That process, because if there's no knower and no known, there's no process of knowing. But how is that witnessed? In other words, how is this process that you're describing of knower, knowledge, and knowing, how is that known? That isn't known by itself. That's an object. That process of knowledge is an object that appears in awareness.
Yeah, that's true.
Isn't it?
Yes.
That's our point here. But that process is, nobody's doing this process, that's the point. The Ishwara, in the form of, who's setting up this structure in the first place? This is the point. Who creates the knower, who creates the objects, and who creates knowledge? Ishwara. The Jiva isn't creating that. That's Ishwara Srishti. We call that the creation of Ishwara. But that creation of Ishwara is what? Appears in awareness. It's known by awareness. Okay, did that?
Yeah, I think of it.
Huh?
Okay.
Because the purpose is not for the jiva to get something here. See? If you're meditating as a jiva, it means you don't know your awareness. Doesn't it? If you know your awareness, you won't be meditating as a jiva. Why? Because meditation is just an act where you're trying to accomplish, you're trying to gain some result. So the doer is there meditating to get a particular result. But the result... Now, if you want a samadhi or an experience, then you can, as a meditator, you can have an experience. But any experience that the meditator will have won't be what? You. Will it? You'll always be free of any experience, and you'll be free of this act of meditation. Because when you're meditating, you're there, present, observing yourself meditating. You don't know that you're observing yourself meditate because you're identified with the meditator, the subtle body. So you think you're the subtle body, the meditator, meditating on an object, and you're not aware that awareness is watching you meditate. Although good meditators often discover that there's something watching them when they're meditating. And then they become inquirers. In other words, then they ask, hey, What is it that's watching me when I'm meditating? I had several disciples that were good meditators and who got moksha purely for that reason. Because they went to all these different lokas and had all these different experiences. And the subject and object was there. But at some point, they realized they were always being observed. That awareness was actually present. This is how when you're meditating, if you get your mind still, awareness will reflect on the subtle body. And you'll start to become aware of awareness, irrespective of what you're experiencing in meditation. And then you'll shift from what? Meditating for experience to what? Trying to understand what that light is that's illuminating the meditator and the meditated, the object of meditation. Yes.
So the awareness observes the knowledge that apparently arises in the jiva.
That's correct.
Which is actually introduced by Ishvara.
Absolutely. There's a very beautiful verse in Atma Bodhi. It said, when an object appears in the mind as a thought and is illumined by awareness, the experience of knowing is produced. The information comes into the mind and then a thought arises, and then that's all mechanical. There's no knowledge yet. This is just Ishvara's generating this dualistic experience. And it says, when that thought arises, it is illumined by awareness, and then knowledge takes place. So all knowledge is dependent on awareness. And knowledge, saying I am the self is not being the self. That's knowledge. Knowledge just negates the ego. But that knowledge should destroy the ego, and you should not be left saying I'm the self. You should be left as awareness shining on that thought. Understand? This is very subtle. We're getting beyond the topic here. You guys are a good group. Cool. We're going to get to meditation shortly. So, and then now we're going to continue on karma yoga idea. He said, actions other than, he's still talking about karma because Arjuna is still a doer. So it says, actions other than those done in a sacrificial spirit bind you to karma. Because our problem is we feel like we have to do things. That's what doership is there. You say, there are some things you want to do, but after you've been doing them for a while, then you feel you have to do them. Why is that? Because the vasana is forcing you to do it. That's why you say, I have to do this. Nobody has to do anything. Nobody's required to do one thing. You're completely free to do whatever you want. You're not have to do or supposed to do anything. Understand this. But you feel you're supposed to do this because what? The vasana makes you, is compelling you to act. I just read this about this murderer. And he claimed that God told him to do it. God means his vasanas. And that's right. That's how he actually experienced it. He was told by some inner voice, which was his vasanas, his God, to kill his wife. He didn't have to, but he had to, because that vasana was so strong, it was so powerful, that rajas was so strong, he had no choice but to do what the vasana told him to do. And so the only way you're going to get out of this is by what? get out of this compulsion to act, this need to act, is by changing your attitude. Karma yoga is only a change of attitude. But you can't just change your attitude unless you understand why karma yoga, this sacrificial spirit, this attitude of devotion, is the only reasonable attitude to have. This greedy, grasping, I want attitude is just producing suffering. And what? And this attitude of gratitude just removes suffering. Counting your blessings, understanding why you should feel grateful because of the great gifts you've been given by Bhagavan, the gift of life. You just forget the gift of life, isn't it something? How we forget, how we love life, and how we forget the gift of life, and we're all whining and complaining and begging Bhagavan for stuff. Give me this, give me that, just like beggars. You won't give a dime to a beggar because you think you're better than a beggar, but we're all beggars here. Please give me love, please give me security, please give me this, I want recognition, I want this, That's what's producing these vasanas. That's what's causing it. And you want to undo it, you just got to change your attitude. It's as simple as that. It's not profound. This shouldn't be hard. No, I have a doubt, Ramji. I don't quite understand this. No, you do understand it. You know what gratitude is. You know what offering is. You know what contributing is. You're required, actually, to contribute because Bhagavan has given you this. Bhagavan's asking you to respond. You have to serve Bhagavan here. It's just, if you don't, you just feel rotten. And Bhagavan will make your life miserable because you're not doing your dharma. This is a hard thing to face. You know, what we want to do is just, oh, forget that. I'll just transcend my ego. I'll just transcend it. Huh? I'll dissolve it. No, you won't. You will dissolve it by karma yoga, and that's the only way it's going to be dissolved. Slowly and patiently every day by changing your attitude.
But some people say, I don't know what my dharma is. I don't know what swadharma is. Can you say that with a karma yoga attitude, everything that happens, every moment, is in accordance with my dharma?
That's right. Absolutely. It doesn't matter. Whatever comes up is your duty to respond to. That's all. And as spiritual people, we don't care. Because what we're going for is moksha. Remember, you can't forget what your reason is here, what your purpose in life is. My purpose in life is to set myself free. That's what I'm here for. We know that because everything I do is an attempt to remove the sense of limitation, isn't it? Everything you do is an attempt to remove a feeling of limitation. Every minute of the day, you're trying to achieve liberation through your actions. That proves that what? That freedom is your nature, and that's really why you're here. It's to discover that freedom that is your own nature and enjoy life. Free of what? Attachment to action and the results of action. In other words, attachment to experiences. So, he said, the Creator instilled this spirit in the beginning. This spirit is in everything. Look at the trees. Look at the animals. Look at how everything takes care and does its duty, follows its nature. Look at how everything in the creation does its duty and follows its dharma, except human beings. The whole thing runs beautifully, except for human beings. They have forgotten their spirit of what? Sacrifice and surrender. They've forgotten that spirit. They're all just in it for their old number one, forgetting for themselves what they want. And said, look at the mess we're living in now. Look at the environment. That's because we're not taking care of Ishwara. You can't drink the water. You can't breathe the air anymore. Huh? The whole planetary system is devolving and degrading as we speak. The environment is so full of toxic chemicals that health care has become the number one issue, the number one expense in all societies now. People are sick like crazy. Not just physically sick, but what? Psychologically sick. And why is that? Because we're not doing our duty to the Creator. We're not honoring our environment. That's Ishwara. We're not loving Ishwara, looking after Ishwara. We're only looking after old number one, me. It's where the whole problem is coming. It says, and the Creator said, the Spirit, by sacrifice shall you multiply. Whew, this is how you get fulfilled. It will fulfill your desires. Not by getting, but by giving. By offering. That's how you get what you want here. Huh? But believe me, when you get this attitude, the whole world just, it can't give you enough. Believe me, when you get this here and your life becomes a contribution, you'll be so overpowered and overwhelmed by the mercy and generosity of God. It's unbelievable. You won't worry about one thing. You'll just be inundated, with good things. Because you taste, Ishwara just appreciates so much that Ishwara looks after you. You're going to see a beautiful verse in there coming up. It's a beautiful verse. It says, with a heart that knows no otherness, keep your mind on me alone, and I will take care of your getting and your keeping. It means I don't have to worry about all this stuff. Ishwara will take care of it. Ishwara brought me here. Ishwara is taking care of me now. Ishwara will take care of me forever. I don't have to worry. All I have to do is worship Ishwara. Yes, sir.
I'm trying to understand the concept of Ishwara in Vedanta. And you said Ishwara is just another term for the two three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas going on in the...
Well,
or Maya, and this is just a
that's
concept.
Right. That's
but
right.
In the, I mean, the traditional understanding in India of Ishwara itself is some God. Huh? Or in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is to be understood as a personal God. You can call him Ishwara or Bhagavan.
That's not what Bhagavad Gita is actually saying. That's the dualistic interpretation.
Yeah, I mean, you're giving us the Vedanta understanding. So yeah. I'm asking you, do we have to think of Ishwara in your understanding as many people think of God?
No. Ishwara is everything that is.
So we can.
Your body is Ishwara, your mind is Ishwara, so your thoughts are Ishwara, the air is Ishwara. Every single thing is Ishwara. Ishwara is just your life and your environment. That's all Ishwara is.
So we could also say Ishwara is creation or...
Yeah, it's the creation. That's correct.
Jagat.
It's the Jagat. It's the creation.
The world.
The world. It's the world. It's whatever you... We just define it as all the objects. This world is was two things. There's only two things in existence. There's the subject, awareness, and the objects that are present themselves to awareness. There's me and objects known to me. Right? That's all there is. Isn't that right? Isn't there your own experience? There's you, and there's the things that you experience and know, including your experience. Your experience is an object. Your experience is known to you. So that's the only two things there are. And all the things are called Ishwara. They're produced by Maya. Maya makes the impossible possible. What does that mean? It's impossible that awareness appear as objects. That's impossible, isn't it? Because it's non-dual. How can you get a creation or objects out of awareness if everything is awareness? If there's only one principle and it's a non-dual reality that is awareness, then how can you, where's the creation? There's no creation. This we call ajata vada. There's actually no creation going on at all. But it certainly looks like there's one. It certainly does seem like there's a creation here. It looks like there's a subject, me, and an object's there, and it looks like you and me are actually different, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Yeah, my experience tells me there is a creation. And there must be a creation. Why? Because you can't experience something that doesn't exist. So there is a creation. But what is the nature of this creation? That's the point. Is it real or is it not? It exists, all right, but it's not real. And the person who's sitting in it, it exists all right, this Arjuna Jiva. It's there, it's real, it exists, but it's definitely not real. Brahma Satyam Jagat Nitya. Awareness is what? Satyam is always present, is real, never changes. Huh? That's called Brahma, Brahma Satyam. Jagat Nitya. Nitya means, Jagat means the creation. All the objects, all the experiences, everything here is Mityaha. Mitya means what? Apparently real. Now what does apparently mean? Apparently means it's not actually real. It seems to be real. Now if you look at, for example, you look at a clay and pot. What's the relationship between the pot and the clay?
Material.
The clay, the clay is, does it depend upon the pot? No. But what about the pot? The pot depends upon the clay. You can remove the pot, but the clay will still be there, won't it? You can just break it up and grind it up and you still have the clay, but you have no pot. And then you can take the clay and you can turn it into something else. You can, whatever you can make a plate out of it. Or any other thing you can make out of it. Huh? Now, what's the relationship between these two? The clay, the pot depends upon the clay, but the clay is free of the pot. That means what? This creation that's projected by Maya is mithya. It's dependent. And is it actually separate from the clay, from awareness? No. It is awareness in a particular form, isn't it? It's awareness appearing in the form of a pot, or a wave, an ocean appearing in the form of a wave, or gold appearing in the form of a ring. There is no difference except that what? The object that's fashioned out of awareness, huh, is not real. That is, it doesn't last. It's created. It appears and it disappears. So all the objects appear in awareness and disappear back into awareness by virtue of this power of Maya or Ishvara. Now, if I don't understand this, then I take myself to be Jiva, and then all the objects I think are real, and I start depending on objects for my happiness. See? See the problem? Then I'm in bondage. And the only way out of this is to understand myself as awareness, and then I see that Jiva and all the objects are dependent upon me on awareness.
We're only doing things here because we think that the things here are real. Isn't it? If you understood that these were only apparent things, they were only appearances. Krishna uses this language here, appearance. If you understand that everything here is only cooked up by Ishwara, it's just a projection, then you wouldn't, what, chase those things. You'd appreciate the play of Ishwara, how Ishwara is manufacturing these beautiful, sexy objects. You'd appreciate that, but you wouldn't be inclined to what? Chase it, and grab it, and hold on to it, and try to possess it, and try to make it make you happy, because, huh? You can't, there isn't anything actually there to make you happy.
I'm still hanging to the question, to Oliver's question about Ishwara.
Yeah.
Yesterday you said, Narada was Ishwara to you, when he said, well, we have only 20 minutes left, so should we make a break or not? But what part of him was Ishwara then?
The whole thing.
The whole thing.
The whole thing is Ishwara.
But then Ishwara is also changing, right? Ishwara.
Yes.
You said Ishwara is everything that is.
That's right. And everything that is changes.
But everything which is changing is not real.
That's right.
Right? So Ishwara is not real.
Huh? That's correct. Okay. Ishwara is everything that is, and everything that is changing. Huh? That's correct. But who knows the changing? Who observes the change?
The awareness, because awareness. This is not changing.
Okay, that's Ishwara. That's the second Ishwara. There's two Ishwaras.
Oh.
Okay? There's two Ishwaras. The Ishwara that changes as a result of Maya, and the Ishwara that doesn't change.
So I could be Ishwara for myself?
You are Ishwara.
No, like...
Ishwara is not a person. Ishwara is not a person. Ishwara is awareness, and as awareness it doesn't change, but when Maya is added to awareness, Maya meaning ignorant, then Ishwara looks aware, Ishwara becomes what? A changing, or it becomes form, it starts to change. Apparently change. It doesn't actually change. See, Ishwara hasn't become this world. Mind you now, if you have milk and you turn it into cheese, can you get the milk back? Huh? No. There, this is creation. There the cheese, the milk, has become the cheese, and there's no way you can reverse the process to get the milk back. Not possible. That's a parinama, or a transformation. Now, Ishwara creates in a different way. It's called a vivarta parinama. He creates a transformation, but the transformation is reversible. Let's put it that way. That is what? The Ishwara awareness appears as the objects. And the illusion, it's Ishwara is such an amazing artist, such an incredible creator, that the illusion that Ishwara creates is so real and lifelike that we think it's actually real. That Ishwara fools itself and pretends that it's a jiva and that the objects are real. This is what Maya does. This is why it's impossible that that happened, but it does happen. And so people think they're not awareness and they think they're bound and they take themselves to be people. And that's all just Ishwara pretending to be what? A jiva and pretending to suffer. Did you know you're pretending to suffer? Did you know that? You're not actually suffering. You're pretending to suffer. And when you understand this fact, your suffering stops. This is why we need to understand Maya and Ishvara. Because it's not a real creation. It's an apparent creation. Just like the pot is a what? An apparent, it's apparently clay. But where's the separation between the pot and the clay? Where's the separation? There's no separation. They're both, the clay is the pot. And the pot is the clay. But there's one just slight, they're not exactly the same. Why? Because the clay is free of the pot, but the pot's not free of the clay.
Name and form.
Name and form. And the jiva is the form, and awareness is formless. Yes, sir.
So this is the second part of Ishvara. You have this conditioned awareness in Maya, and you have also the unconditioned chip, or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
You call it also Ishvara.
Yeah, that's Ishvara too.
So everything, whatever is Ishvara.
Yes, that's right.
So.
That's right. So there's no duality. That's what Vedas say. Vedas say reality is non-dual. That's correct. This is called Saguna Brahman, and this is called Nirguna Brahman. Well, these are terms. You've heard these terms? Nirguna means without gunas. Huh? This is Saguna. It has three gunas. That's the three gunas produce all the forms. So, let's get this clear. This is freedom is right. Oh, here is freedom is only in discriminating what? Awareness, nirguna, which is nirguna, is free of objects from what? Saguna, the objects, forms appearing in awareness. And a form is any experience, any object. That's all a form is. They just appear and they disappear. That's why they're not real. Nirguna is Brahman, is always here. Awareness is always present. If you're awareness, you're never born and you never die. This is why people who know their awareness are immortal. Because they're awareness. They're not even people anymore. To call them people is not really right. The person has what? Understood, I am awareness. And therefore they have no fear of death. They have no fear of loss. They have no sense that they can gain anything at all. They're just what? Awareness. And the body that appears in them is no more important to them than any other body that appears in them. Because Maya is just generating this sense of duality, this sense of separation. That's what Maya is. It's very weird how this happens. How peculiar that there's this power in awareness that can create duality where reality is flat. There's no dimensionality here. It just looks like dimensionality because Maya creates it. And Krishna says that in here. He says, by my Maya, I delude all these beings. He's speaking here as pure awareness and operating Maya. And Ishvara is never contaminated by Maya. Ishvara is Maya, but is never contaminated by it. It's always free of Maya. And you're always free as awareness. So the whole point here is to realize that you take awareness as your primary identity. This is all just about who am I. But Ramana is talking about, and all the sages are talking about, my primary identity is awareness, and my secondary identity is jiva, as subtle body. How are we doing here? Oh, okay, we've got another half hour. All right. Everybody okay? Got a few tired people. This is intense. It's intense work. He says, so with this attitude, coming back to karma yoga, you got off. It's good. You guys are good. We're good. It says back, honor life with this spirit and it will honor you. You wonder why things aren't flowing in your life? You know how being in the flow, you wonder why things aren't flowing and just moving along really nicely? It's just the lack of this spirit. You start making a contribution, it'll be like on a magic carpet. That's how it'll feel. A life will just take over. It'll present to you this amazing, it will be so much abundance. You'll be overwhelmed by it. You'll be so amazed and so grateful. But you've got to start it. If you just keep thinking of yourself, if you're only trying to get for yourself, that's not going to work. You're just going to keep your vasanas in place and you're going to keep suffering. But when you start giving, look out. It's amazing. This attitude leads to freedom. When you honor life, it supplies desirable things. But if you enjoy its gifts without offering something in return, you are a thief. Those who eat the remnant of the sacrifice incur no guilt, but those who eat only for themselves incur guilt. The remnant of the sacrifice means what? The feeling of bliss and happiness that comes when you give away yourself. When you turn over the actions and the results to Bhagavan, and when you dedicate your life to knowledge of Bhagavan, then what? That's the sacrifice. The remnant of that is you just feel wonderful. Because you're finally doing the right thing for yourself, not for your ego. You're finally honoring that part of you that's true and real and good. Not just looking after your fears and your desires. Living beings are born of food. Food comes from rain. Rain comes from the effects of sacrifice. And sacrifice is born of action. He's saying, now look at the whole cosmic cycle. It's all sacrificial. Everything is serving and sacrificing everything else for everything else. Everything is part of it and doing its part here. The Vedas encourage a sacrificial religious attitude, and the Vedas come from the self, the imperishable self. If you keep this attitude, you're always in harmony with the self. The lives of those who do not live in harmony with the cosmic order but pursue sense pleasures instead are wasted. Nothing need be done. You don't have to do anything. I just said that. You're not required to do anything. Nothing needs to be done by those who delight in the self, are satisfied with the self alone, and whose lives are centered in the self. There is no reason to do or not to do, nor do they depend upon objects for their happiness. Do what is to be done well without attachment, and you will attain the highest good. Not only will you attain liberation by acting in this spirit, you will inspire others to act in this way. This year, if you want to do good, everybody wants to save the world. This is how you save the world. You make yourself full and complete by fulfilling your dharma, and other people will be so inspired, they will follow your example. You don't have to preach to them or teach them. Just by living this life, living in this spirit, the whole world around you will transform. Because whatever role model does, is done by others. I need not act, he's speaking as a self. I need not act. As far as I'm concerned, everything in the three worlds is perfect. So there's nothing for me to do. Yet I act, because if I become lazy and refuse to act, people would follow my example. They would become confused. The social bonds that keep a society to it healthy would unravel, and it would deteriorate. Just as the unwise, who are attached to the results of their actions, act only for themselves, the wise should perform action without attachment for the good of others. That's how you serve creation. Everybody else is creation, and what they need, you serve them, you give them. Using your discrimination, that doesn't mean mindlessly, because you watch these human beings and they'll take over your life, they'll eat you up with their desires. So you need to use your discrimination. But the attitude is there to subservient and giving. That's the point. They should not, oh, here's a good one. I love this one. They should not lecture the unwise concerning actions and results, like the religious people. Huh? Just, unless somebody asks you, and asks you two or three times and puts it in writing and goes down to the courthouse and gets a notary to witness that they really want to know, then you should keep your mouth shut. We're not, huh? The worst thing you can do is to tell people what they need to do and who they are and talk to them about their spiritual crap. Just keep your mouth shut. If they really come to you and ask you, fine, but not from you. Even though you know very well what's wrong and what their problem is, it's you should keep your mouth shut, because it will fall on deaf ears unless they're ready. This is why we say we only teach qualified people. Qualified people are people with open minds who are ready to listen. And the people whose minds aren't qualified, they just get up and walk out of my talks. That's all they do. And that's great. They have people say, oh, how do you feel? She walked out or he walked out. I say, I feel good. Because why should I? They'll be happier because their mind is closed. They don't want to hear this. And they're just disturbing me anyway with their bad thoughts. Let them go away. They don't like what we're saying. That's fine. No. We're not trying to convert anybody or change anybody or get them to see this. When your mind is open, you'll hear the truth, because the truth just is the truth. You can't reject it. You just cannot walk away from it. That's the truth. And if you are truly a truth seeker, you will hear it. So, you know, he's very clear about this. They should not, it says, let not the wise unsettle the minds of the ignorant. That's another translation here. Let them be. They're not ready. I love that. Such a great verse. It's a difference between Hinduism and other religions. Because basically the Hindus don't convert and proselytize and so forth and so on. Basically. Well, you find it happening now. There's some Rajasic people that are going around trying to convert people. But in this religion, it's just about letting people be. And when they're ready to hear the truth, they come and they'll hear it. And said, so you shouldn't tell people, if you want to change the world, instead they should encourage them to act in the right spirit by example. Don't say anything, just be the change. That's all. Embody the change that you want to see in others, embody it in yourself, and they will what? Become inspired to change. And your world will change around you. This knowledge will reflect itself in all your relationships. It's a delusion to think that I'm the doer, because actions are caused by the gunas influencing the body, mind, and senses. The wise, however, remain free because they understand that the body, mind, sense complex engages its objects automatically. Even if you're meditating, you know what's causing you to meditate? Sattva guna. You think you're meditating? No. Sattva guna is forcing you to meditate. But you say, oh no, I'm meditating. You're not meditating. This guna is appeared in your awareness, and you start to behave like a meditator. And when Rajoguna and Tamoguna comes in, you stop meditating and off you go. The gunas are doing this, believe me. Every thought and feeling and action that you do is produced by a guna. I just discovered one the other day, a connection. I was really tamasic. I've been working too hard. And I've been traveling a lot, and I meet a lot of people. And I just finally just got totally exhausted and totally worn out. And I'm one of the most positive people you'll ever meet. I'm always positive. It just, and suddenly I felt this terrible sense of despair. Huh? This awful sense of just total despair. And I thought, that is the weirdest thing, because I'm not despairing. Huh? I'm fine. And yet this feeling was there. It was so intense. And then I thought, oh, hey, that's one of the feelings or thoughts that comes with tamas. I was just totally tamasic. And as soon as the tamoguna changed, I got up, I started doing some exercises. Rajoguna started to come in. I did my, you know, I did my yoga and all that sort of thing. And took a shower and all that. Pretty soon that tamoguna disappeared. And what happened when the tamoguna disappeared? The feeling disappeared. Boop. I never thought for a minute that it was me. I just was so interesting to see how, you know, if I didn't know who I was, I would have been really, really kind of very confused. I didn't understand how the gunas were producing all of these experiences and all these thoughts and all these emotions, huh? And that they, all those things that, you know, and then when I'm inspired, what's that? Sattva guna. When I'm enthusiastic, what's that? Rajo guna. I'm not doing this. These gunas are just what? Causing me to behave like a puppet on a string. I get too rajasic, then I get tamasic, then I have those negative feelings, and so forth and so on. It's true for everybody, enlightened or not enlightened. I just don't identify with the gunas, so what? It doesn't bother me. I just find it peculiar and curious to see how these gunas are producing everything. So he said, the wise remain free because they understand that the body and all your connections with all the objects is hooked up automatically. You're not doing that. You're not connecting yourself. Oh no, I want to connect. Connection. Everybody's out there trying to connect. Believe me, you're always connected. If you're trying to connect with somebody or something, you're out of touch with reality. Just get rid of that connection thought and you'll see you're totally connected all the time. There's no connection needs to happen. It's already there, but you get anxious or something and you feel lonely and separate and Maya starts working and then you feel you're not connected. You're always connected. That's what it's saying here. Those unaware, now here it is. Those unaware of how the gunas affect action get caught up in the actions of the body-mind-sense complex. Huh? If all you need to do is be aware of these gunas, understand those three gunas, and you will not identify, you'll see. Huh? But if you don't understand how these gunas and how they work, you're going to get caught up every time. You'll find yourself getting identified with these feelings and doing these actions. And then you start suffering. Because you lose your freedom. You're surrendering your freedom to the gunas. And you're letting the gunas push you around. But knowledge is freedom. When you understand the gunas, you don't identify with them. You know, that's just the gunas. That's just Maya. That's just Ishvara playing his tricks. Ishvara is the greatest trickster. Huh? It's always up to some tricks. makes a problem and then solves the problem, makes another problem, then solves the problem, then makes another problem and solves the problem. It's just a great big play going on here all the time. And these gunas, this Ishwara, is causing it. One who knows the self should not disturb the understanding of the undiscriminating ones who don't. He repeats it twice. If you know who you are, keep your mouth shut. Don't go around babbling, telling people. With a discriminating mind free of anger, expectation, and a sense of I and mine, offer your actions to me and fight. If you faithfully follow this teaching without finding fault, you will be freed from the results of your actions. But if you are doubtful and do not follow it, you will not progress. So, simple. It is wise to act in harmony with your own nature. Because all beings follow their own natures automatically, what use is control? This is a big topic here. Whew. Huh? This is a huge topic here. You know how in relationships you're always trying to control the other person and get them to do what you want? Huh? Does anybody know about that? I think so. I think we all know that very well. Yes, we do. Huh? What's the part? Why is that stupid? Why is it stupid to try to get other people to do what you want them to do? Why? Because the gunas are what? Causing them to behave the way they behave. They're not in control. They're just following their natures. So they can't be different. They can't do it any other way. And you're asking them to do it some other way. You want them to be different. But they can't be different. Oh no, I'll change for you, sweetheart. I'll change. I'll be different, I promise. Trust me. It never happens. It can't happen. It's impossible. Why? Because the gunas are doing it all. We're hopeless. We're helpless. I'm as enlightened as they come, but I'm helpless. I just accept it. It's the gunas. Too bad. Huh? I'm a jerk. It's making me act like an idiot. I'm sorry. That's tamoguna or rajoguna, whatever it is. I cannot get myself excited about it because what? Those gunas are working all the time. Stop trying to get everything to fit your idea of what you want. Your likes and dislikes are useless because the gunas are causing all this stuff to happen. And liking it or disliking it is just a waste of time. Yes, ma'am.
Yesterday you said there is a way to control the gunas.
There is.
So there is a way I can change my partner. Well, he can change.
No. You can't change your partner. You can change your gunas, but you can't change his gunas.
No.
No, you can't change the other person's gunas.
I meant, but I can make him change his.
You can't make him change his gunas. It's totally impossible. He's under the spell of his gunas. Huh? Experience doesn't transfer. Understand? You can't do that. This whole thing, you know, this is where these problems come. Wanting things to be different. Why do I want things to be different? Because I'm not happy with myself. If I was happy with myself, like Krishna just said, I see everything as perfect here. There's no reason why anything has to change at all. See? Because he's looking at it from himself's point of view. Somebody, yes?
But sometimes the Dharma of a special place requires to try to make it different. If I go to a school with young children, they can read I cannot say as a teacher, it's okay as you are, you don't have to read, I teach you nothing because just your gunas. So the dharma of this place that I must try to change this.
Yeah, but you don't have, you don't have to be there. If you're trying to change anybody, knowledge you can, if a person's mind is open, knowledge will transfer from one person to another, but experience won't transfer. If I fall in love, you don't fall in love. If I get enlightened, you don't get enlightened. It doesn't happen like that. What? My karma stays with me and your karma stays with you because it's all controlled by Ishvara. So wanting anything to be different here is a mistake. Everything here is absolutely perfect as it is all the time. And the bad stuff is good stuff. This is what karma yoga means. Karma yoga means there's no bad stuff. The bad stuff is good stuff, and we convert what's bad stuff into good stuff by understanding that what? Everything here serves Bhagavan, serves Ishvara. Yes, ma'am.
You said now you cannot change, for example, your partner. But I think at the first evening or the first morning you said you changed a lot, right? And is it like this, that you can change yourself, that your partner can change, friends can change, if they are working kind of against their nature, their dharma? Because you changed a lot, right? You told us how you were with the 20 or 25, I don't know, but then you changed a lot.
Well, did I change? Did I make the changes? I mean, from one point of view, it looks like I changed. But did I change?
You changed the circumstances.
Yeah, okay, as a jiva, yes, that's right. But yes, from that point of view, it looks like I did. And taking the position of the ego, I'd made certain choices. And those choices resulted in a change to this body-mind entity.
Yeah, and it's like when there's kind of dust upon your awareness, and you cannot see yourself, and then there's dust upon, and then you act like in a way which is not going right with your dharma and with your nature.
Yeah, that's right.
You understand what I mean?
Sure, absolutely.
You can change. You can change your circumstances, your actions.
Sure you can.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's why we say you can control the gunas. You can. But here we're talking about moksha now. So we're trying to deliver knowledge here. And knowledge means you're beyond the gunas. Now, to prepare yourself for knowledge, you're going to have to transform your gunas, and that's what yoga is about. And that's why he's telling you here, you need to cultivate sattva guna. Because, as you said, when there's dust on your mirror, what happens? You don't follow your nature. Now, what is our nature? Our nature is inquiry. We're jnanasus. And soon, Krishna's going to tell Arjuna, he's going to give him a funny identity, he's going to give him a different identity. He realizes that Arjuna is not capable of understanding that he's in awareness. So Krishna tells him to take another identity other than Arjuna. What does he say? He says, be a yogi, O Arjuna. In other words, your nature, your swadharma now that you've come to this position is that you are a yogi. Now, what is a yogi supposed to do? A yogi is supposed to practice karma yoga and develop sattva. You live a simple, pure life, a simple, pure sattvic life. That's your duty if you're a yogi. And understand. But that's not who you are. That's just a temporary identity that you're taking up to what? Get out of that rajasic, tamasic mentality that you had before. Later on, we're going to see here in the Gita, they contrast these two types of natures, the sattvic nature of a seeker and the rajasic, tamasic nature of a samsari. It's contrasted here. And we're meant to like move from that identity of a worldly person to a spiritual or a sattvic person. And you can't act in harmony with your nature when your mind is rajasic and tamasic. You can't do what you're supposed to do properly. You've got too much desire, and what you're supposed to do is hidden from you, and you're too dull, and you can't feel what you're supposed to do. You can't, your intuition or your feeling of what you should be doing is what? Is skewered because of this rajas and this tamas.
Thank you for listening. For more information about Vedanta, yoga, and self-inquiry, visit shiningworld.com, yogavidya.de or meinyogalehrer.de.